parenting on Moncrief, thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. You can send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. You're listening to the Moncrief Show on Newstalk. Pleased to say Joanna Fortune joins us once again for our parenting slot. Joanna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First question is about a five-year-old. I have two gorgeous little girls, almost three and almost five. It's the elder of the two I want to ask you about. Sometimes she bites herself. I don't know how to deal with it. I have tried to notice when this happens, mostly it's out of frustration or because I've just given out to her, but not always. On one or two occasions, I have not understood at all why she's done it. She bites her arm, sometimes hard, sometimes not so hard, and one time she drew a tiny bit of blood, and that really scared her. She doesn't do it often, maybe twice a week, and then not again for months. In the year or so it started, I'd say she's done it maybe 8 or 9 times. I work in a place that deals with self-harm, so I'm hyper aware of this and terrified of either making a mountain out of a molehill or not taking it seriously. I've ignored it, spoken to her about it, given her a squishy toy to take her frustration out instead, told her to punch the sofa instead, all of which were fine, but she does the biting so rarely it's difficult to establish how to handle it correctly every time. The one reason why I'm leaning slightly towards ignoring this at the moment is because she doesn't do it with anyone else, only me. My husband has never seen it. She's so happy in school, has a great bunch of friends and is so happy. I really think she is doing it to get a reaction out of me. I've tried to speak with her about it, but maybe she's not articulate enough to express her feelings. Any help? Greatly appreciated.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? I mean, developmentally healthy children will bite themselves and will most commonly do it out of absolute frustration. And usually because in the frustration, they're not able to say, hey, I'm feeling overwhelmed or I'm really displeased with how you're speaking to me or that you won't give me my toy or whatever it is. So it's a form of communication. It's also frequently born out of a sheer inability to express their emotions. But once they're over 4 years old, it wouldn't be deemed developmentally appropriate. It is veering more on the inappropriate side because we would expect them to have a greater grasp of cause and effect, a stronger grasp of emotional language. So, I mean, I think this letter here is really detailed. And, you know, because one of the first questions we'd always ask when something like this is presented is, are there any triggers? Have you spotted any patterns to when this happens? And I suppose while you're saying there isn't really consistent patterns, there is a pattern in that it happens only with you. And I suppose that in itself is a pattern. So now I'm going to ask this parent to think about, is it when you either get back from work or is it when the two girls are with you together and your elder girl may feel she has to fight a little harder to get seen, to get heard, to get your attention? Maybe she wants more of you. I'm not saying you should give that and ignore the three-year-old. I'm just trying to explain what might be behind it. So, and again, I know you work in self-harm and you're right, you're calling yourself out that you are hyper aware of it. So I don't want to dismiss that either, because while self-harm behaviours are rare in such young children, they're not unheard of. This, however, does not fit for me the pattern of the type of self-harm we see in very young children, such as five-year-olds, because 8 or 9 times in a year wouldn't be enough to constitute this as a self-harming behaviour pattern. But that said, I would still keep an eye on it. Now, my first, you know, reaction to this is kind of all of that just to kind of explain and contextualize it, but to look at addressing the feelings language piece. There's a couple of things you could do with her. Use parts language. So when you see her biting, instead of getting into stop biting, why are you biting? I don't like when you bite, you're hurting yourself. Instead of getting into a whole narrative about the biting, simply say to her, I think your frustrated part is coming out now. What will we do together to help your frustrated part get smaller and get your happy part bigger? Mm. So you're teaching her that she's made up of many parts, that she has a happy part, a sad part, an angry part, a frustrated part, a scared part, a jealous part, or whatever part you need her to have. She has it. And that's teaching her that she's made up of a collection of complex feelings and that one feeling does not define her, i.e. she is not the frustrated child in your family. She is a child who is currently frustrated. Mm. So you're just helping her develop a language, really, by using the parts. And the other thing you could do is have her lie down on a really big roll of paper, draw around her, like do a body map, and have her colour in her body where all her feelings live. So you assign each feeling a colour, she colours in how much of it, where do they live, and you'll see Is she holding a lot of her emotions in one area, in her tummy, in her head, around her face? Does it make sense that biting is what she does? Otherwise, what you're doing is exactly what I'd suggest. You've given her a squishy toy. You've given her a positive alternative. If you're frustrated, punch the sofa instead because you're not hurting yourself or anyone else. And I would just keep an eye on it. If this didn't go away, and I would be looking at certainly no more than another 3 months. If it didn't go away in that time, like if you're not getting 3 full months without it, I'd consider bringing her to someone because she may just need a little bit of help finding another way to express her feelings.
Okay. Do you think there's anything in it? She only seems to do it in front of a mammy.
Yeah, that's the bit that I'd be saying, you know, is it when you're distracted? Not the child, but when mum is distracted. Is it when the two children are competing for mum's attention and it's a little bit hard to get the three-year-old out of the way and, as you know, get frustrated and end up biting? And it's she's biting herself, not her sister. You know, I'm not saying that's better or worse. It's just an observation that she may have a tendency to turn those feelings in on herself rather than externalize them. So it may be very hard for her to talk about it. When you say, why do you do this? That actually may be way too much for her because she genuinely might not know.
Is it too much to wonder, given that mam works in a place that deals with self-harm, that the five-year-old has overheard something or is aware of this or gone, God, mam gets really animated on that subject?
Yeah, I think in terms of cause and effect, it's definitely possible if mum responds in a big way that the child goes, oh, interesting. Okay, that's definitely possible. There isn't a consistent enough pattern to the biting for her to be doing it just to affect mum. I mean, there are lots of ways of getting attention for children. This is a very particular way to choose. So I would say it's actually probably more a statement of needing connection rather than demanding attention. So if it's possible in busy families, I totally empathize, but if it's possible to give her more one-on-one time around that, she may be a child who just actually needs more.
Yeah.
Even if you're giving her lots, needs more.
A texter says, my son, when he was frustrated, he would play with sand. He would throw it, squish it, you name it. He got great relief from it.
That's a really, I mean, well done your son at a young age to have worked that out. That's a really good sensory tool, sand, particularly if you're using kinetic sands, you know, that you can get them to squidge together into a pile and then tear them apart and they've quite a unique texture. But sand play is an excellent form of relaxation.
Yeah. And someone's texted in. We probably get this text every week, actually, but I never read them out. This is mad. When I was younger, a kick in the arse was all I needed to keep me in line. So what they're talking is scenario where a child is biting themselves
and you
inflict violence on them. Yeah. That makes total sense, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I would definitely endorse that.
Yeah, that's the answer to most things. In fact, if you come round here, we'll give you a kick in the arse and make you feel much better. I have a two-year-old boy who now wakes up from his daily nap screaming and shaking. It takes about 10 minutes to calm him down, says Jerry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading this going, I want to know more, Jerry. How long is the nap? Because at two, what's very common is your child will pull back from two naps, you know, a morning and an afternoon, to one lengthier nap, maybe about 2 hours, maybe 3 hours for some children. So how long is the nap? If your child is waking up after an hour and actually they needed 2 hours, they may be actually a bit distressed that they've woken up and raging that they've woken up and they just haven't regulated. Is your child self-waking from their nap, or are you deciding, oh, that's enough sleep, because if they sleep any longer, they won't sleep tonight? You know, if you're doing like a controlled sleep routine, parents would frequently wake a child from a nap. That might not suit this child if that's what's happening. And it's simply one of those, without knowing details, all I can say is he might need more sleep, he might need less sleep. However, I would say when your child wakes in this state, if it's feasible and accessible to you, to sit with them on your lap in a rocking chair or a glider, you know, one of those moving chairs, basically, and just shh, 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 just using your voice that way, no words, and simply that rhythm and synchrony. Because we know that when there's emotional dysregulation, and particularly for young children, they have to be co-regulated with their parents or carers. So the best thing you can do is trigger those subsystems in the brain associated with regulation. And the best way to do that is through rhythm and synchrony.
Yeah.
So simply swaying, rocking and hushing like that is very effective. The other thing that children who I'd be familiar with and have worked with in the past where this has been an issue, one common thread that either you need to rule out or it is the answer, is the possibility of low blood sugar after a nap. In which case, they wake up and you have a cracker, to hand and a little sippy cup, and you give them some water and something to eat. Even if there's a bit of resistance, I want it. I, you know, you give them the drink and they throw it across the room and you just, you know, bring it back really calmly and patiently. Yeah. But actually simply a snack and something to drink can be the answer.
Yeah. Actually, just going back to the first question we had about the frustrated kid. If we teach kids to punch a couch or throw sand, is that not telling them they need to act out their frustrations? I would worry about how they would act out as teenagers or adults when they're bigger and stronger.
Yeah, it's a valid point. I mean, one of the ways you would do it is in a very boundaried way. I mean, there's the ACT ACT approach where you acknowledge the feeling you're really frustrated now because of whatever, and you communicate a limit. It's not okay to bite yourself because it's hurting you and I need to make sure you're safe. So you're communicating a limit and then you target an alternative. If you need to bite something, bite this teething toy, bite this chewy something, you know. So you're saying, I get, you're making sense of the emotional experience for your child and reflecting that back to them, but returning them with a positive option. So if your child is hitting others, punching themselves, sometimes what you can do is have a punching cushion, not any old cushion, not the sofa in general, but say, this is the punching cushion. Or often I would use a balloon, blow it up and hold it by the top. You know, the little knot you tie in a balloon, hold it away from your body and tell them it's a punch bag and they can punch the balloon. So it's not punch anything and everything. It's punch this designated thing. And you might then from there move them beyond that into another way of expressing their frustration. That's a more in the moment approach.
My daughter's 17 years old and a fifth year student. She has asked if we could leave home for an evening so her friends could have a sit-in party night in with alcohol. I immediately refused. There seems to be a trend where teens have these get-togethers in their family homes. I went away for the weekend and she had 10 friends turn up with vodka, etc. I got wind something was up, so brought a swift end to the party night. What do you recommend at this age?
I'm just kind of smiling at this going, 17 years old. I can imagine what my mother would have said had I proposed this kind of situation. But the reality is the fact that she said it to you in such a calm way, like, you know, do you mind leaving the house so me and my mates can come around drinking? That casualized way of saying it does, you know, belie that this is quite normal in her peer group, or at least they believe it to be quite normal.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's okay for her to ask, but it's absolutely not up to her. What happens in your home? You're the parents in charge. So I'm going to flag that at 17, your daughter and her friends are not old enough to be drinking alcohol. I have to do that. And I think it could be a good opportunity to speak to her about alcohol in general, the effects it can have, keeping herself safe, all of that. And always, if you're okay with your 17-year-old consuming some alcohol under your supervision, be very aware other parents of 17-year-olds may not be okay with that. So you would have to speak with all of the parents of the friends. If you are going ahead with this, you would have to speak with all the parents and say, are you aware your child will be coming with vodka to my house? Are you comfortable with that? In one way, I would be saying to her, no to the alcohol, but you can have friends over, but I will be in the house, but I'll certainly give you space. You can have the use of the kitchen and sitting room. I will be upstairs. I'm not leaving the house. You don't get to tell me. We're not housemates.
Yeah.
Because this is acting like, you know, you're housemates and that's just not what it is. Behind all of this, like, I'm not saying, oh, your child is out of control. What are you at? Because actually, I would say this is her wanting to feel grown up and to feel independent. And that's very normal and healthy at 17 years old. So maybe have a think about positive ways that you can afford her opportunities to practice more independence and to be grown up. And some of that is about giving responsibility at home, things that she might not, you know, thank you for. But if she wants to be treated as a grown up, then she has to act like it too. And that doesn't mean when you leave the house that she goes behind your back bringing 10 friends and vodka in, because that's literally telling you I'm not ready for the type of responsibility that I'm asking you for.
Yeah, it seems to be the hardest thing, especially when they're 17.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's really
hard. The alcohol thing, and even ringing up other parents and going, there's going to be alcohol. Are you comfortable with this? Sounds like judginess, because maybe they've reached the point of, what are you going to do? You know,
no, absolutely.
And a lot of parents.
I'm thinking you've got to cover yourself, though, because there will be the parent who is, some of them will say, yeah, I am. But look, if they're going to be drinking, I wouldn't be comfortable if you left the house. I would need to know a parent's in the house. And parents between themselves can sort that out. But I mean, just be really aware, you know, at 17, they are legally underage for drinking alcohol.
Yeah. OK, we have more questions for Joanna after this.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Joanna Fortune still with us. Next question is, my nearly 2-year-old went off eating dinners nearly a year ago after a few courses of antibiotics. He will eat fruit, cereal and formula. Any suggestions to get him back on foods?
Oh, it's a tough one, and so common, because I mean, we underestimate the impact antibiotics have on any of our bodies, but particularly very young children and their developing systems and their guts. I mean, one course of antibiotics can kill up to 80% of your gut bacteria. And now, not kill it and it's gone forever, but needs to be regenerated. And the best way to do that is high fiber, unprocessed foods, which, you know, all 2-year-olds just love, don't they? Not, you know, they're not going to embrace your high fiber, unprocessed food ritual. So what it might be is that his tummy is just a little bit off since the antibiotic, and he's finding it difficult to tolerate foods. And that now, after a year, has settled in almost to a habit where I can fill myself up with fruit, formula and cereal. Thanks very much. And I'm happy out. So you're almost, I mean, a year is a long time. So it's almost like a back to basics. At two, I'd nearly want to involve him in some of the food prep, make it interesting and fun to do food. So make it a tactile experience. So when you're prepping food, thinking now finger food stuff that toddlers eat out of their hands, have him help you mix in the bowl, get his hands stuck into it, really engage with the food so that it's interesting. And then when it's cooked and handed to him, it's something he had a part in. So you can do something like that, and that can be a really nice sensory way of re-engaging him in food. But at this stage, if you're looking for a very kind of solid strategic way of getting him back onto a broader range of foods, I would be tempted to say you need to consult with a paediatric dietitian who could maybe give you a plan as to what foods are best to slowly and gradually reintroduce to build up his tolerance again. So a year is just such a long time. Maybe call the local public health nurse and see if they have a paediatric dietitian on staff in the health centre. And if not, is there one that they could recommend to you locally?
Right. Now the next question, we may need to define a term for people that mightn't be necessarily familiar with it. I've got a child who's being subjected to parental alienation by an absent parent who won't engage in meaningful co-parenting. I feel like my ability to parent my child is being taken away from me. What can I do? She's 12. Now, what is parental alienation?
So parental alienation is when one parent actively, consciously, strategically turns the child against the other parent.
Yeah.
So it would be a consistent undermining of the other parent. It may be even something a little bit more sinister and direct in that they would do it through the child. So make the child the conduit of negative messages.
Yeah.
Or say really bad things about the other parent in front of the child, or draw on traits your child has, like, oh, I hate when you do that. It's exactly like your mum or dad. Mm. That kind of thing, but consistently, and it's very conscious and targeted. It was at one stage referred to as parental alienation syndrome, but that syndrome bit has been dropped because it's really not accepted by any of the WHO or DSM, you know, as a diagnostic, because it's, you know, it's very subjective in terms of how do you measure and diagnose it. But as a pattern of behaviour, it is something that family therapists would certainly be familiar with, and child therapists as well. So, I mean, there's a couple of things here. Is this something you've decided yourself, this is parental alienation, or have you been consulting with somebody who concurs and agrees with this for you? When you say subjected to parental alienation by an absent parent, I'm a little confused by that. Is that the parent who's out of home, or is that a parent where there's no access to the child? Because is it being done?
Then I assume what they mean by absent is that they're not in the house.
Not in the home. That's actually what I'm assuming as well. So then I would be, is it happening while the child's on access, and how frequent is that? So there's a couple of questions around it. She's 12 years old. So you need to act and respond to this. I mean, in general, we would advise parents, it almost seems so generic, it can't be helpful, but just some rough guidance: remain yourself very calm and consistent to your child. So even if your child you perceive is turning against you, you don't respond in a way that shows you feel that. You have to respond as the consistent, mature, available parent. I'm seeing that you're pushing me away, but I'm here for you and I love you and I am not what you've been told I am. And you're modeling in a doing rather than saying way, a more positive response. But you've got to be consistent. I would say definitely, definitely, but in order to do that, get support for yourself. Because
hard
it's
to keep
very
that up.
Difficult. Oh my goodness, so difficult. If you're at the receiving end of parental alienation, it is extremely difficult to parent through it. So get some support for yourself. And I mean emotionally, but also perhaps legally as well. Log any and all incidents in a little diary you keep for yourself, especially if this, and it sounds like it might be part of a legal process or if it will end up there. Mediation would be excellent, but
they have to have an open heart to do that.
You know, there has to be willingness on both parts to do that. And the fact that you say this is a parent who won't engage in meaningful co-parenting, I wouldn't hold out too much hope for mediation, but it is excellent. I might suggest that you consult with a family therapist with your daughter. With your ex-partner too. But again, I'm saying that because that would be the ideal, but I'm accepting that might not be realistic. But a family therapist could be really helpful for you and your daughter to work together, or somebody who could work dyadically, which is literally parent-child together, two of you in the room.
Yeah.
Something like a practitioner who's using what we would call DDP, which is dyadic developmental psychotherapy, literally done with parent and child in the room, where the therapist is specifically trained to speak the thought pattern and behaviours of both parties with and to each other.
Yeah.
So it's a very particular way of working, and it can be very effective in these situations. There was, I'm not sure how active they are or if they're still there. I don't know a whole lot about them, but I do know there was a Parental Alienation Awareness Ireland support group. And I think it is worth tapping into any support groups out there and just even suss it out, see if there's information, see if somebody can point you in a helpful direction towards therapeutic support with people who are experienced in parental alienation. I think that could help. But basically, I'm saying, I'm sorry you're experiencing that and you do need to take action.
My 8-year-old girl cannot handle when other children get something that she wants. She's an only child and we purposely don't spoil her at home. Now, whenever her friends get a better mark in school or get some toy she wanted and didn't get, she flies off the handle and gets into such a rage that it's almost impossible to calm her down. Last week, her best friend moved up a level in swimming lessons that they were both in, and she hasn't spoken to her since. I've tried to manage her expectations and explain to her that people get different things and that's a part of life, but she refuses to accept anything I tell her. Is there anything I can do?
I mean, yeah, I mean, you're right. Look, that's a part of life, but that's such an adult interpretation. When you're 8 years old and you're all about how it feels rather than the logic of it, you're not going to take that in. I wouldn't link the fact that she's like this to the fact that she's a single child, because, you know, correlation and causation there wouldn't, there's nothing to say it's because she's a single child. This may simply be how she is. So have a little think about, who does she remind you of in those behaviours? Is there anyone in your family that is like? Is competitive nature, is perfectionism, is very high standards a trait? And I'm not saying within parents, but in general in the family, because I think as parents, we have to watch how we react to adversity. Like, even if we're saying things like, oh my goodness, if I don't get this email sent by a certain time, everything is ruined. Even statements like that, if our children are hearing that, they're hearing, if it's not perfect, it's not good enough. And those are kind of unhelpful messages for children to glean. I would try and make sense and just empathize with her. It's really hard for you that your friend got moved up a class in swimming and you didn't. And it's hard to be happy for her when all you can feel is sad for yourself. And just name it.
Yeah.
Because then you're helping her go, oh, is that what's happening to me right now? So it's not that I hate my friend. It's I hate I'm not up there with her.
Yeah.
And just helping her make sense. Don't assume at 8 that they can do that kind of thought process for themselves. So I would say, even if we say to our children, don't worry, just try harder. Again, you want to put that in context. You have to always be encouraging and praising the effort over the outcome. So it's that you almost want to be disinterested in the result, but really invested in how they got there.
Yeah.
So celebrate success, but don't overdo it, is what I'm saying. Excuse me. And I think give her the opportunity to succeed and fail, but don't minimalize her feelings of disappointment. Name them for her and just actually say to her, I know this is hard.
Yeah. So this is apropos of, I suppose, everything we've been talking about. My partner and I have been talking about having kids, and I've always thought it might be in my future. While listening to the parenting slot, I don't really understand why we should. There is just so much that can go wrong or be super hard or just a right pain in the arse. Seriously, though, can you explain why having kids is a good thing? I don't know. I can't.
I don't know, but people do it all the time.
They do it all the time.
Actually, having children is a really joyful experience, but nobody is saying it isn't challenging and difficult, because it is. And I think it's because it is so important and it is so valued by us that that's why we place this level of high expectation on ourselves. And I just think parents are trying really, really hard to get everything right. I do think we're much better as parents to catch ourselves in every moment we're getting wrong, and we're not as great at finding ourselves doing right, but we get way more right than wrong.
Yeah. And the on the going back to the 17-year-old and the, you know, the party in the house, Dave points out, and I think he's right, actually. 17 is below the legal age for purchasing alcohol, not drinking
that's
alcohol.
That's actually true. In fairness, that's true.
Save on a licensed premises. They can lash into it in a, I don't know if they lash into it is really the phrase that any parent is looking for. And that person, that a kick in the arse person, was back on again on that subject of the 17-year-olds. And they say, as for bringing an army of 17-year-olds into your house to drink vodka, two kicks in the arse. The vodka. Actually, on that point, we all agree. Joanna, thanks really
Thank
for coming
you.
To us. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break. After that, what women really want.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card, offering Ireland's first personalised lending rates.